quiet sample, a borrowed light.
Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
We have a really incredible deep dive for you today.
We really do, because imagine trying to predict a massive, devastating storm months before a single cloud even forms in the sky.
Right.
For decades, I mean, predicting preterm birth has felt exactly like that for the medical community.
Yeah, it's a huge blind spot.
It is. When you think about pregnancy, there's always a certain amount of, you know, uncertainty. But this specific complication stands out as this massive, often completely invisible risk that just arrives without warning.
Exactly.
We're looking at a condition that affects approximately 11.1% of all newborns worldwide.
Which is just staggering.
Right. That is more than 1 in 10 babies born globally. And incredibly, it is responsible for about 35% of all pregnancy-related deaths.
Yeah, the gravity of that statistic really, it cannot be overstated.
Yeah.
Preterm birth leads to severe maternal and fetal outcomes. I mean, for the child, it can mean immediate struggles with lung and brain development in the NICU.
Right, the neonatal intensive care unit.
Exactly. And it carries long-term cognitive and behavioral risks too. Yet despite how incredibly common and dangerous it is, reliable biomarkers in early pregnancy have remained incredibly scarce.
Just like non-existent almost?
Right. We simply haven't had a tool that can, you know, wave a red flag months before early labor actually begins.
So how could this change if a routine blood test already being given to millions of pregnant women could suddenly predict this complication weeks in advance?
It would change everything.
It really would. And that is exactly the mission of our deep dive today. We're looking at a breakthrough method that searches for hidden messages already floating in the mother's bloodstream to solve this massive diagnostic blind spot.
It's a profound shift, really, in how we approach non-invasive diagnostics.
Wow, totally.
And the most remarkable part is that this method doesn't require a single new physical procedure for the patient. Yeah, it's about finding entirely new answers in data we are already collecting.
Before we dive into the mechanics of how this is actually possible, we need to acknowledge the people behind the science.
Absolutely.
Today, we celebrate the work of the researchers from Southern Medical University, Guangzhou First People's Hospital, and their collaborating institutions across China and the UK, who have advanced our understanding of preterm birth prediction.
Yeah, their collaborative effort is really paving the way for a completely new standard of prenatal care.
Okay, let's unpack this. To really understand the breakthrough, we have to start with the physical environment of the blood itself.
Right, the actual biology of it.
Exactly. If we were to zoom in on a microscopic level, you know, what is actually floating in the maternal bloodstream during a typical pregnancy?
So it's a highly dynamic environment. When we draw blood from a pregnant woman, we are looking at something called plasma cell-free DNA.
Or cfDNA, right.
Yeah, exactly, cfDNA. And to understand why it's there, you kind of have to look at the life cycle of a cell. Normally, your DNA is tightly packed away, safely inside the nucleus of your cells. But cells throughout the body are constantly dying and being replaced.
It's just normal turnover.
Right. And this isn't some chaotic process. It is a highly controlled, programmed cell death called apoptosis.
So the cells are systematically, like, dismantling themselves?
Yes. And during that dismantling process, the DNA inside the cell is released.
Just out into the open?
Yep. When maternal hematopoietic cells, which are her blood cells and placental trophoblasts from the developing fetus, undergo this normal apoptosis, they're DNA fragments.
Okay.
And those fragments end up just floating freely in the mother's blood plasma.
I like to picture the mother's bloodstream as this this massive river.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Right. And this river is constantly carrying fallen leaves and twigs, which is the cellular debris from the upstream forests. And in this case, those forests are the placenta and the maternal immune system. And currently, in standard medical practice, we usually only look at the genetic letters written on those floating leaves to screen for fetal chromosomal abnormalities, right? Like Down syndrome.
Yes, exactly.
And that process is called non-invasive prenatal testing, or NIPT.
Yeah. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, that routine leaf reading process is already being performed on a staggering scale.
Oh, it's huge.
We are talking about over 10 million NIPT tests conducted every single year.
Wow.
Yeah, across more than 60 countries. It is a massive triumph of modern medicine because it replaced invasive procedures like amniocentesis.
Right, which carries its own risks.
Exactly. But the core clinical problem this study addresses is that by only using NIPT to count chromosomes and look for a few specific genetic diseases, we are ignoring a vast untapped reservoir of secondary information.
Just letting it float by.
Right, hidden in this exact same cell-free DNA.
So if we know there's all this valuable debris floating in the blood, I mean, the obvious hurdle is how do you distinguish the trash from the treasure? Like, what are we physically looking for if we aren't just reading the letters of the DNA sequence?
So we are looking for structural, physical signatures called nucleosome footprints.
Okay, let's leave the river analogy for a second because we need to visualize the DNA itself.
Fair enough.
If I'm picturing the DNA inside a cell, it isn't just a loose, tangled mess, right? It's spooled.
That's a really helpful way to visualize it, yeah. You have about 2 meters of DNA thread crammed inside a microscopic cell nucleus.
That is wild.
It really is. To make it fit and to keep it organized, the DNA thread is wrapped tightly around protective protein complexes called nucleosomes.
Okay.
They act exactly like wooden spools holding thread.
Okay, so how does knowing about these spools help us read the cell-free DNA in the blood?
Well, when a cell undergoes apoptosis and its DNA is released into the bloodstream, there are enzymes floating around in the blood plasma.
Okay.
And they act like molecular scissors. They chop up and degrade the exposed bare DNA.
Oh, I see.
But the parts of the DNA thread that are wrapped tightly around those nucleosomal spools, those sections are physically shielded from the scissors.
So they survive intact.
Exactly.
So we are looking at the protective covers or the footprints of these spools.
Yes.
But let me see if I can deduce how this works. If I'm looking at the sequencing data, and I see a gene that is heavily protected by these spools, like a really thick footprint with a lot of surviving DNA fragments. Does that mean that specific gene is highly active and doing a lot of important work for the pregnancy?
You know, you've just hit on the most crucial, highly counterintuitive mechanism in this entire field of study.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the answer is the exact opposite.
Wait, what?
A higher read depth, meaning more protection, more surviving fragments, and a thicker footprint at the starting line of the gene, which we call the promoter region, actually indicates decreased gene expression.
Wait, really? A heavily protected gene is an inactive gene?
Yes.
Why is that?
Think about it from a functional standpoint. If a gene is highly active, the cell needs to physically access it.
Right.
It has to unspool that specific section of the DNA thread so the cellular machinery can read the instructions and build proteins.
Oh, wow. Okay, I get it.
Because that active section is unspooled and wide open, when the cell dies and releases its contents, that active region is completely exposed to those molecular scissors in the blood.
So it just gets shredded.
Exactly. It gets chopped to pieces and cleared away.
Hmm.
So an active gene leaves a very shallow, depleted footprint.
Ah, I see. And conversely, if a gene is silenced or turned off, it stays tightly wound around the protective spool.
Right.
Hidden from the scissors, leaving a large, highly visible footprint in the blood.
You have it perfectly. By measuring the depth of these footprints across the entire genome, researchers can essentially reconstruct a real-time high-definition map.
That's amazing.
It shows exactly which genes in the placenta and the mother's immune system are turned on and which are turned off.
That is absolutely wild. It's like finding a negative space painting of the cell's activity.
It really is.
But, you know, to prove that this map could actually predict a complex condition like preterm birth, they needed a massive amount of data.
Oh, huge.
This wasn't some tiny pilot lab experiment. We are talking about a major retrospective study involving 2,590 pregnant women.
Yeah, that's a very robust cohort.
Right. That breaks down to 518 who experienced preterm birth and 2,072 full-term controls.
And the scale and the design are what give these findings so much weight. They didn't just look at one isolated demographic.
Right, because that can bias the results.
Exactly. They gathered this data across 3 completely independent hospitals. In diagnostic research, demonstrating that your model works across different clinical environments is critical.
To prove it actually works in the real world, outside of a perfectly controlled lab.
Exactly.
Right, because you are dealing with millions of data points from thousands of women, and to find the signal in all that noise, they turned to machine learning.
They had to, yeah.
I know they evaluated a few different complex models to build their predictor. For those of us who aren't data scientists, what kind of tools were they using?
Well, they tested 4 different approaches. They looked at models like random forest, which you can think of as asking a massive council of thousands of decision trees to vote on an outcome.
Okay, kind of like a consensus.
Right.
Yeah.
They also tested XGBoost, which is an algorithm that sequentially learns from its past mistakes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it focuses all its computational energy on the data points it previously got wrong. But they ultimately found that a support vector machine, or SVM, worked the absolute best for this specific biological puzzle.
I'm guessing a support vector machine was chosen because, well, we are dealing with a massive multi-dimensional space of genes.
Yes.
SVMs are notoriously good at drawing mathematical boundaries in highly complex non-linear data, right?
That is a very accurate assessment.
Mm-hmm.
An SVM is essentially an algorithm that finds the optimal geometric line or hyperplane that cleanly separates different categories of data. In this case, it was drawing a boundary between the subtle footprint patterns of a full-term pregnancy versus a preterm pregnancy.
Right, finding that invisible line.
Exactly. But to make it perfectly tuned, they paired the SVM with something called a backward feature selection algorithm.
Backward feature selection. Is that essentially like starting with a massive recipe containing thousands of ingredients
mm-hmm.
and systematically removing them one by one, tasting the dish each time to see if removing that ingredient makes the flavor better or worse?
That captures the logic beautifully. They started with all the genetic footprint data available and systematically removed variables.
Just stripping it down.
Right. Each time they removed a gene's footprint from the data pool, they checked to see if the model's predictive accuracy improved or degraded.
Sounds exhausting.
It is a grueling, computationally heavy process of elimination. But through this rigorous method, they stripped away the biological noise and built their final, highly refined classifier, which they named P-Term.
Here's where it gets really interesting. What did this P-Term classifier actually find hidden in the blood?
The results were striking.
Right, like if you're a listener wondering what the molecular difference is between a full-term and preterm pregnancy, what does the data show?
Well, initially, when they just looked at broad differences, they identified 277 genes that had distinctly different footprint coverages between the preterm and full-term pregnancies.
Okay, 277.
But when they applied that backward feature selection recipe testing method we talked about, the P-Term machine learning model narrowed that massive list down to just 83 key, highly predictive genes.
And how well did the footprints of those 83 genes actually predict the future of the pregnancy?
The performance statistics are incredibly strong. In the medical world, we use a metric called the area under the curve, or AUC.
Right.
It measures how well a diagnostic test distinguishes between two states. An AUC of 0.5 is no better than a coin toss.
Just pure chance.
Right. And an AUC of 1.0 is absolute perfection. The P-Term model achieved an overall AUC of 0.849 across all of their validation cohorts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it translated to an 85.3% overall accuracy rate.
That is a phenomenal leap over just guessing based on symptoms.
It really is. And crucially, for babies born before 35 weeks, which represents a particularly dangerous early delivery with much higher risks for the infant, the model's prediction accuracy reached an astounding 0.866.
That's incredible. And what fascinates me is that this isn't just a computational black box spitting out random numbers, you know?
Right, not at all.
There is deep established biology driving this prediction. Among those 83 genes, the researchers highlighted 10 hub genes that were heavily interconnected and influential in the network.
Yes, the hub genes are key.
I want to highlight three of them, ESR1, NFKBIA, and ATF3.
Excellent examples.
Right, because ESR1, for example, is a major gene encoding an estrogen receptor, and estrogen signaling is heavily involved in preparing the maternal body for labor.
Absolutely.
So altering that signaling early on can completely shift the timeline of the pregnancy. What about the other two?
The biology absolutely validates the algorithm's choices. Take NFKBIA. The degradation of the product of this gene is known to activate intense inflammatory reactions.
Oh, and inflammation is a huge trigger.
Exactly. We have known for a long time that excessive inflammation at the maternal-fetal interface is a primary driver of early spontaneous labor.
Wow.
The model is physically seeing the genetic switch for that inflammation being flipped.
That's amazing.
And similarly, ATF3 regulates markers associated with preeclampsia, which is dangerous high blood pressure, and overall placental dysfunction.
So P-Term is essentially eavesdropping on the cellular distress calls of a struggling placenta and an inflamed maternal immune system.
Yes.
Long before the mother feels a single physical contraction.
Exactly. And what's fascinating here is how this genetic footprint data compares to the standard clinical tools doctors use today.
Okay, tell me about that.
In current practice, physicians try to gauge preterm risk by looking at a patient's BMI before pregnancy, their medical history, and something called the fetal fraction.
Which is the percentage of the cell-free DNA in the blood that actually comes from the baby, right?
Yes, exactly. So the researchers wanted to see how P-terms stacked up against those standard physical and historical variables.
Makes sense.
They used a non-linear model to combine the P-term footprint data with those standard clinical features. The combined model scored that fantastic 0.849 AUC.
Okay.
But here is the critical finding. When they tested those standard clinical variables entirely on their own, just looking at BMI and fetal fraction without the genetic footprints, the predictive score was a mere 0.527.
Wait, 0.527 is basically that 50-50 coin toss you mentioned earlier.
Exactly.
That means the standard clinical variables are practically useless on their own for predicting this in early pregnancy.
It proves unequivocally that the cell-free DNA profiling alone is vastly superior. The genetic footprints are telling a detailed biological story that the external physical symptoms simply cannot match.
So what does this all mean? Like, for you listening right now, why is this specific breakthrough such a game changer?
The most profound immediate clinical implication is how seamlessly this could be integrated into our existing healthcare infrastructure.
Oh, because of the NIPT tests?
Yes. Because P-Term looks at the cell-free DNA that is already being collected during routine NIPT tests in the first or second trimester, it requires zero additional blood draws from the mother.
That is virtually unheard of. Usually a new diagnostic capability means a new, expensive, invasive procedure, or at the very least, a separate trip to the lab for another needle.
It bypasses all of that. It requires no changes to existing clinical procedures and, theoretically, no extra detection costs on the sequencing side.
Because they already have the data.
Right. The whole genome data is already being generated by the sequencing machines. We just need to apply the P-term algorithm to the raw data files that laboratories already have sitting on their servers.
That's brilliant.
It is a non-invasive, essentially cost-free, shortcut to early intervention. If an obstetrician knows at 15 weeks that a patient has an 85% chance of preterm delivery, they can immediately implement closer monitoring.
They could prescribe hormonal therapies like progesterone.
Exactly. Or advise lifestyle adjustments to protect the pregnancy.
I have to play devil's advocate for a second, though.
Go for it.
An 85.3% accuracy rate is a massive leap over guessing, but that still means nearly 15% of the time the model gets it wrong.
True.
In a clinical setting, false positives for preterm birth could cause a lot of unnecessary psychological panic for the parents, or even lead to medical interventions that aren't strictly needed. Did the researchers address that balance?
You are touching on a fundamental truth of medical diagnostics. No test is 100% perfect, and managing the psychological and clinical impact of false positives is a serious consideration.
Right.
The researchers acknowledge this. However, in the context of preterm birth, the current alternative is having almost no early warning system at all.
Fair point.
The high AUC of 0.849 suggests the model has a strong balance of sensitivity and specificity.
Ooh.
Furthermore, they found that P-term was highly versatile across different types of preterm birth.
Oh, because there are different causes.
Right. Sometimes it's spontaneous labor where contractions just start. Other times it's caused by the early rupture of membranes, often called P-prom, where the water breaks too early.
Yeah, I'm caught both.
The study showed P-term predicted spontaneous labor with 85.5% accuracy and P-prom with 82.3% accuracy.
Wow.
It's catching multiple distinct biological pathways of failure, which gives clinicians a much more reliable foundation to work from than they have today.
That versatility really speaks to the robustness of the hub genes it's looking at. But, you know, as with any major scientific leap, we have to look at the boundaries of the data.
This raises an important question regarding the study's limitations. While a cohort of 2,590 women is robust, all the samples came from hospitals in China.
Oh.
Genetic backgrounds can significantly influence baseline biological markers and risk factors. To ensure the P-term model is universally applicable and equitable, we desperately need more data from ethnically diverse populations globally.
That makes total sense. You can't train a machine learning model on one demographic and safely assume it perfectly maps to the biology of every human on Earth.
Exactly. Additionally, there is the variable of time. The blood samples in this study were collected over a wide window between 12 and 28 weeks of gestation.
That's a huge span of time in a pregnancy.
Right, because pregnancy is highly dynamic. The cell-free DNA profiles change rapidly as the baby grows and the placenta evolves. We need much more granular, longitudinal studies to understand exactly how the specific timing of the blood draw affects P-term's accuracy.
That's a really good point.
And finally, the study relied strictly on the data found in the blood. They lacked histological or physical tissue analysis of the placentas after birth to confirm the exact biological mechanisms that the DNA footprints were pointing to.
So the algorithm can look at the blood and say, you know, the placenta is experiencing inflammatory stress, but they couldn't put the actual placenta under a microscope after the delivery to confirm exactly how that stress manifested in the tissue.
That is the missing link. Bridging that gap between the computational predictive algorithm and the physical tissue pathology is the next crucial step for researchers to fully validate the biology behind the math.
But even with those limitations, I mean, the core takeaway here is just phenomenal. If we distill this entire deep dive down by analyzing the nucleosome footprints of cell-free DNA that is already being collected in standard prenatal tests, scientists can now accurately predict a mother's risk of preterm birth months before any physical symptoms appear.
Yes.
This invisible biological fingerprint turns existing routine data into a powerful, cost-free early warning system.
What does this mean for the future of prenatal care if every routine blood test holds a crystal ball for the rest of the pregnancy?
It's incredible to think about.
If we can clearly see the footprint of a stressed placenta at 15 weeks, could we soon map the footprints of fetal brain development or detect the earliest triggers of maternal autoimmune conditions in real time?
The possibilities are endless.
The blood isn't just a crystal ball for birth timing. It might soon become a live stream of human development itself.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science base by base. Quiet sample, a borrowed light, a river of fragments in the middle of the night. Tiny signs in the bloodstream, hidden in plain view. Footprints on the genome, spelling something true. Read the rhythm at the doorway of a gene, where the nucleosome stand like a curtain on a scene. If the pattern shifts early, we don't have to wait. We can name the risk before it's too late. Footprints in the flow, oh, 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 oh. Tell me where it goes, oh, 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 oh. Signals in the shadows, under soft fluorescent glows, oh, 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 oh. 83 sparks in a light. Jerk.